Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Hello and welcome to the Market Musings Podcast, where today we're going to be talking in the crypto space as we welcome two guests from Santiment, which is a market intelligence platform for crypto. So we have Brian Quinlivan, who is the Director of Marketing, and Dino Ibis Begovic, the content and SEO man. So welcome to you both. How are you doing?
Great, Mark. Pleasure to be here. We're really excited to talk about our platform and talk about our own histories in cryptocurrency a bit.
Yeah, I'm very happy to be here.
Good. And of course, we have usual Kenny as well.
Yep. How are you doing, guys? Great to have you on.
Yeah, very excited to be here.
Yeah, perfect. And I'm just looking at my window here. And it's actually sunny in Scotland, which is unusual, but I think you guys pretty much have sun all the time where you're from.
Yeah, I'm from Los Angeles, California, here in the US. And it's, you know, not to make everyone jealous, but it's consistently been a pretty nice weather here over the last few months. For Fahrenheit followers, it's in the mid-70s right now.
All right, that just sounds perfect for me. It's almost weather for just sitting outside having a beer. Yeah, I wouldn't mind that here. We actually had snow a couple of days ago. It's crazy. Middle of May and we're still getting snow in Scotland. But hey-ho, such is life. And how's the COVID situation there? Are you guys coming out the other side?
Sorry, can you repeat that question?
Yeah, no worries. I'm saying, how is it, the COVID-19 situation over there? Are you guys beginning to come out of lockdown?
Yeah. We've definitely been very aggressive with vaccines. You know, not to get into politics or anything, but we're definitely strong proponents of the vaccination here. And people have successfully put the numbers down significantly with the government's effort to really get people immune to the virus and have people actively going in and giving them positive motivation to do so. And I got my second one myself just a few days ago. It was not a very big deal at all. And I think that Los Angeles in particular has been one of the best cities in the US, at least, that's really taken the bull by the horns as far as getting it under wraps.
Yeah, definitely the world's coming back to some sort of normality. Whether it'll ever get back to where it was before, well, time will tell. But no, as I was saying, it's great to have different companies on the podcast. And obviously, you guys are from Los Angeles, and Mark's based in Holland, and I'm in Scotland. So it's good to speak to people from different cultures and, you know, and different ways of life. So that brings me nicely on to the whole purpose of the podcast. What we like to do in Market Musings is, obviously, we'll talk about the company and the products and the token, but we like to find out about the people behind the company as well, because we are great believers that people make businesses and people invest in people. So what we would like to do, if you don't mind, maybe for the next sort of 10 minutes each, is maybe just take a step back in time, tell us a bit about your business career, your education. You can go further back to your childhood, where you were brought up. You know, what motivates you, you know, how you get into the sector, you know, anything you think it would be relevant and make people want to invest in your company. So I think, Brian, we're going to start with you because you're first in the alphabet. That's just the easiest way to do it. So really, the floor's yours for the next 10 minutes. Just give us a bit of a potted history of Brian.
Sure. Yeah, I'll do my best to give a little background on myself and how I got into the cryptocurrency game and got with Santiment to, you know, try to really analyze the markets and innovate data intelligence for the cryptocurrency community. So I have been, I was raised as an only child. I went to regular public school in Los Angeles County. Was always fascinated by data in particular. I was kind of of a math brain, had a lot of interest in understanding the world through numbers, right? And, you know, even in elementary school, learning about stocks through a little mock stock project that we did, where everyone in class got to pick a different company and basically ride that horse and see who would get the best returns was really fun for me, you know, even though we were all like, you know, 9 or 10 years old and kind of just making random guesses based on companies that we thought were the coolest to watch on TV, you know, commercials. It was still a lot of fun to really learn about the fact that you can make real money off of just picking a stock, right? And having your success be reflected by their success and be a real shareholder. And I remember going home and asking my dad about it and asking if he invested in stocks. And he said, yes. And I asked him to share me the details. And he said, I don't really know much about it, son. I just know that it goes up over time. And he said, time in the market is more important than timing in the market. And that stuck with me for a long time. And, you know, I just to jump straight to current day, when I started getting into cryptocurrency about 5 years ago, I realized that same phenomenon is true. You know, for as much as you can have a mild edge by, you know, doing technical trading and looking for ways to take profit here and buy bottoms here, the people who usually do the best are the ones who patiently just hold an asset that it has validity for going up over time. And to me, that was always very fascinating.
Yep. And obviously, I'm just looking at your bio, Brian, and you've got an MBA in finance.
I sure do, yeah. I went to undergrad, got a degree in anthropology, as I thought that one day I would be studying people and cultures at the time. That was what interested me in my late teens and early 20s. And by my mid-20s, I realized I had zero interest in that and I did not want to make a career out of it. So I ended up going back to school, got a degree in finance from a well-respected school in Orange County, about 50 miles south of Los Angeles. And it was probably the best decision I ever made. It really gave me a lot of understanding of how the world works, why business works the way it does, you know, how much profitability really matters to a company, and the rest is kind of a little bit secondary, right? I think a lot of people, it should be obvious, but if you want to make a company work, and I'm not even relating this to sentiment, but if you want to make any company work, it starts with your bottom line and ensuring that your returns far outweigh the expenditures. And to me, that it was almost a light bulb moment, because it had always made sense. But you think there's all these other factors that go into business, and it's really that simple. Whether it's your own workplace or an actual stock that you're investing in, or even a cryptocurrency with a dedicated team who are developing things, you know, it starts with making adjustments and putting yourself in a position to succeed and improve that bottom line.
Yeah, good stuff. And what was your sort of foot in the door into the crypto world? What was your sort of first break? I mean, did you go chatting in doors, or did you sort of gradually work your way in?
Yeah, so in late 2016, I don't know if you guys would remember or if you were in it yourself, but there was a common phrase known as the flippening that was being thrown around a lot at the time. And Ethereum was really starting to roar. And I say that relatively, because roaring at the time was something like $100 as opposed to where it is now, above $4,000 per Ethereum coin. And a lot of people were seeing that, you know, this new coin that had just come out in 2015 was really beginning to increase in market cap at a rapid rate, and was offering some pretty significant technology that was objectively looking kind of superior to what Bitcoin was offering. And you know, my friend said, you really got to get in on this. It's going to go to the moon, you know. Mentions of Lambos were thrown about, all sorts of fun stuff. And I said, you know, I should check it out. It's interesting. And I don't know much about this. And he sent me to a website in the US known as Coinbase, that honestly looked like a video game platform. And I was confused. I wasn't sure if it was legitimate or if it was a big scam, but I ultimately decided I'm just going to give this a shot and put in like $500 and see how it goes. And by mid 2017, I think that that price had more than doubled. And by then I was hooked and said, I would love to get more into cryptocurrency. At that time, I still had no idea. If someone asked me what cryptocurrency was, I wouldn't be able to tell them. But I knew that it was making me money, and that was exciting. So I kind of got more into it, started doing some research. I actually took a fascination to Willy Wu, who's a maybe the most well-known fundamentalist in crypto, and started studying things like NDT and things that were kind of equivalent to what the PE ratio would be in stocks. And that gave me some ideas on how I could potentially understand crypto in a unique way, which, you know, at that time especially, there was very, very little understanding or focus on the fundamentals of things. It was all really based on resistance and support levels, which of course has merit. And technical traders out there, you know, I don't blame them for relying on that technique, but it's limited because it's all based on past history, and assuming that what has happened in the past is going to repeatedly come true. And that'll happen to an extent, but obviously we're looking at Ethereum at 4,000 right now. That has never happened. So I don't know what kind of support levels and resistance levels can really be looked at right now, other than short-term ones, to really give an edge there. So that's why when I came to Santiment, it was like finding my home, right? Finding other people who are very interested in the data aspect of cryptocurrency, being interested in looking at crypto in new ways that weren't being discovered yet. And it enabled me to make all sorts of models and actually do it as a job for the goodness of not only myself and the team, but for our community. And it would help us grow by putting new models together, which we have on a tool known as Sandsheets, where people can plug in our API and basically look in a Google Sheets template and have data load in a meaningful way to give them context as to where the markets are now, whether there's a bullish or bearish divergence happening, how close we are to an opportunity or danger zone based on historical values that go far above beyond what a simple resistance level would be. And it's really been great ever since, you know, meeting Dino, meeting our founder, Maxim, having like-minded people that support what I can do and me learning from their vast well of knowledge has been, you know, unbelievable to say the least.
Okay, thank you, Brian. Very, very good to hear your history there. So, Dino, if I can bring you in here and give you the same opportunity whenever you're ready, just to tell us a bit about yourself and where you've come from.
Okay, well, hello, first of all, everyone listening to the podcast. Kenny says, my name is Dino. I am actually not from California. I'm from Serbia, from the capital of Serbia, Belgrade here. And it is indeed very sunny here as well, but it's kind of the par for the course for us. I've been with Santiment for the last 2 years, doing content and market analysis. It was really my first foray into crypto. So before that, I didn't really have many touch points with, well, first of all, cryptocurrencies, but just the stock market and the finances in general. I studied law. So it was sort of never really a big the touch point for me. I had a few like economy 101 classes in college, but that's about it. But I was always sort of interested in storylines, content, and I think crypto isn't really powered by. I mean, sure, there are definitely fundamentals and indicators that can help you and provide some alpha for you. But crypto is powered by storylines and memes more than I think any other market, and I think that's kind of what got me into the market. The most, this idea that at the end of the day, it's all about marketing and effective sort of promotion of your projects. And even with like very little to no fundamental value, some of these coins, like still, I don't want to say that, for example, EOS, right, is a coin with no fundamental value. But it's safe to say that a coin like EOS, which has been sort of, named the Ethereum killer in 2018 and has done nothing for the last 2 years, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, during this bull run last week, it hits a three-year high and it jumps 100% or something. It's a chaotic market, but it was very, very fun getting to know it. But yeah, like I said before that, I was always sort of into content and storylines. When I was in high school already, I joined the debate team, and it's become sort of a big part of my maturation process and it allowed me sort of to critically examine both sides of any debate and any topic that I was covering. I was in the sort of competitive debating cycle for almost 10 years. Did fairly well. Went to a couple of world championships, couple of European championships. It was always great to sort of go up against the best speakers in the world. People from students from Harvard and Yale and all of these like powerhouses, and to kind of battle your wits was always a super interesting challenge for me. But very early on, I sort of knew that I probably wasn't going to get a regular 9-to-5 job. My last or senior year of college, I had an opportunity to, the startup scene in Serbia. So that was maybe 5 or 6, 7 years ago. The startup scene in Serbia was non-existent at the time. There were like two companies that did anything outside of the norm, right? So I had a friend of mine that was, he was co-founding this company called Fishing Booker. It was basically, the idea was pretty simple. It was an Airbnb for fishing charters. Basically, you connect people that want to go fishing to captains all over the world. And at the time, the company had 3 employees, and I jumped at the opportunity, becoming the 4th employee of Fishing Booker, basically doing everything and anything, customer service, business development, SEO, marketing, anything. I mean, when you're sort of a 5-man team, you're becoming a sort of jack of all trades by nature. So that was sort of my first foray into startups and this sort of entrepreneurial ecosystem. I've spent about a year and a half, maybe 2 years with the company. It's now, I think, the largest fish and charter marketplace in the world. It employs about 100 to 150 people here in Belgrade. It's been crazy to see it grow. I mean, when I came into it, we had maybe like 50 different boats on the website. Now there's like 6,000 or 7,000 different captains. It was sort of a crash course in how to build a working startup from nothing. We were bootstrapped from the get-go, never took any investments. So we just did it all the old-fashioned way. So a few years later, I sort of started branching out. I started realizing that SEO was, out of everything that I was sort of working for, out of everything that I was working with at the company, SEO was sort of the most interesting field for me. So I started branching out, basically went solo and started getting sort of individual clients for SEO. I've done that for a couple of years. And then once again, another friend of mine, this was maybe after the 2017, early 2018 crash, where, I was convinced the crypto was a bubble. I was definitely a no coiner at the time. But a friend of mine said, he was starting an internship in Sentiment. It was actually not an internship. He was one of the sort of product leads, and he wanted to introduce me to the team. They needed a content writer and somebody in general. They were expanding their marketing team. So after sort of meeting the guys, I immediately saw that, first of all, they were serious about what they're doing. And second of all, it was interesting to see that me as sort of somebody that really didn't believe in the crypto hype all that much. Here was a company that was, what it was doing is it was trying to provide hard data on cryptocurrencies and exactly sort of, add context to what's going on with specific coins on a daily basis, add context to market events, provide transparency to the markets. And I thought that was really cool, but both sort of from a business standpoint, but also just from a sort of an ethical standpoint. So I quit my sort of all of my other clients I've closed, and I went to work full time for Sandy. And I've been here for I think 2 years now, and so far it's been great. Definitely changed. I mean, I've certainly changed my view of the crypto market by 180 degrees. I'm still not sure that we're not in a bubble right now, or that we are not close to a bull cycle top. I've been sort of fairly bearish about some of the more recent moves made by Ethereum in particular, just based on some of the fundamentals and some of the indicators that we have on our platform, which are showing overvalued conditions. But overall, I think, just looking at the crypto market just from the last 3 years that I've been really involved in it, I can safely say that as a big skeptic myself, I've seen it grow from this very sort of Wild West type of market to an industry that, is powered by strong fundamentals more often than not. Sure, there are still going to be scam projects and, vaporware coins that really don't provide any value. And I think that's always going to be sort of a part of the cryptocurrency market. But more than ever, I think there are actually solid protocols with actual user bases, some sort of a network effect for the at least top 10 coins that make you feel like, the current prices are actually reflective of their fundamental value, which is great to see.
That's that fishing booker. That was really cool. I like that. I looked that up. I might even suggest some of my family go and have a look on there because they're into fishing. That was quite a journey to build that company. And it's funny that you say as well, Dino, that you were a non-believer sort of in 2018 to now completely turning around and believing. But yeah, when it comes to bubbles, it's always an interesting one, I think, is that kind of discussion around bubbles, because I mean, clearly there is a bubble, there clearly is going to be a large bubble that will burst one day, in quite a dramatic way, I imagine, similar to how, the dot-com bubble, burst. But it leaves in its wake, fundamental strong businesses behind it. The internet was born and all these new things came out of the dot-com boom and bust. And I guess the same thing will happen with crypto, but you are going to have these, maybe mini bubble bursts, if you want to say, along the way. And I'm kind of getting the vibe that, things are looking a bit sort of overvalued or toppy at the moment, what with Ethereum there hitting all-time highs and Bitcoin's been at an all-time high and dropped back a little bit. And a lot of the alts are moving, particularly everyone's heard of Doge. Or I like to call it Dog E. I don't know how you're supposed to say it, but Doge or Dog E. I quite like Dog E. But how crazy is that? It's, as you say, it's a meme coin. It's about the story, and we find that time and time again in the stock market. Okay, you can kind of delve into the fundamentals a bit more of a company that's listed because it usually has operations that are going on. But really, it's a lot of it is about sentiment and about the story and how it's marketed. But at the moment, it's a crazy world that you guys have found yourself in. But it's fascinating to hear where you've come from.
I was just going to say.
I mean, I suppose the great thing about the crypto world and the modern technology is that you can form a company with multiple different. I think looking at your website, you say you've got a. Your core team spans 12 different countries and 8 time zones. I mean, that must be a bit of a nightmare to try.
It's a huge team there.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It does take quite a bit of synchronizing over the week, but I think we've gotten accustomed to it. Like, it was pretty hectic for the first couple of months, but after the fact, you just there's a lot of sort of interdepartmental communication that doesn't need to take place on meetings. So, we use Discord a lot for anything that in Notion as well as a sort of task management tool. I don't really think most of the crypto companies are in that same situation, especially now with the pandemic. Even if you used to be sort of all in one place, you're now sort of just scattered all in your own homes, right? I mean, sure, there are a few co-working spaces. Like here in Belgrade, the co-working spaces are already open. So I'm thinking of, I've been vaccinated, so I'm thinking of just moving back with, you know, to work with other people. But at the moment, everyone's kind of decentralized, right? Just working from home and contributing from your own place of residence. So yeah, it's been a bit of a crazy time to adjust to all of these different time zones. But, you know, Brian's here from LA. I'm from Serbia. You know, when I wake up, Brian's usually sound asleep and vice versa, but we still make it work, I think, pretty effectively.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of meetings that start around 7 a.m. my time. So it starts a few hours earlier than I'm used to, you know, in previous jobs, but it's well worth it. And it kind of gets me up bright and early just so I can join many of our European colleagues during their afternoon time where they're still on work.
Yeah, makes you appreciate those nice LA dawns, right?
Exactly. Get to watch the sunrise, all that fun stuff, whether I like it or not.
Good stuff. Yeah, I'm a bit of a morning person myself, but I don't think you're a morning person, Mark, are you?
Well, it depends. I mean, I like the mornings are the best time of the day, aren't they? Yeah. Really, you can achieve an awful lot, and it's nice to be up early, and you know, you kind of feel the world is yourself, and no one bothers you. But I must admit, I don't find it easy getting up in the morning, particularly. But I do try. I'm normally up at about 7 in the morning, which is, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an age thing, Mark. I think the older you get, the earlier you get up. Because I find now, as soon as I wake up in the morning, if it's 5 or just after 5, I'm like, well, I might as well get up. I don't know. It must be an age thing, because it used to be I could lie to 8 o'clock in the morning or 9 o'clock in the morning, but now I wouldn't even contemplate that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still waiting for that age thing to kick in. I'm 31 and I'm still a night owl. Like, I usually fall asleep at like 3 a.m. or something.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's just I've been that way my whole life. So I was hoping that with time I was going to sort of move back into the normal, sort of wake up at 7 and start my workday sort of schedule, but so far no dice. And I can't say that my girlfriend's all that excited about it, because I wake her up every evening when I go. Yeah, so I'm trying to rectify some of my scheduling here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll catch up with you. I mean, I'm 50 next year, so yeah, it's definitely an age thing. All right, that's great. We've heard a bit about you guys, and it's fascinating to see that, you know, you've not just left, you know, school or university and said, right, I'm going to get into the crypto space. You kind of found your way into it, you know, not saying by accident, but it wasn't your sort of first choice as a business. But let's move on to sentiment then. So, I mean, maybe both of you can chip in, but it'd be great to get a high-level overview of the company, how it started, and what are the sort of main product offerings that are available at the moment.
Yes. Sure, Brian, I'll take it.
Yeah, I'm happy to. So sentiment was started back in 2016 by our founder, Maxim Balashevich, and he has essentially developed quite a platform along with myself and Dino and many of our staff members who put a strong focus on objectivity, finding ways that our data can tell a story without bias. And it's very difficult to do in crypto, where that's kind of all people are used to is, you know, relying on experts to tell them whether something has value or doesn't. You know, there are, you know, the crypto dogs of the world and all sorts of avatars out there who will tell you what to do. But the fact of the matter is there's a layer of anonymity behind it. There's only so much trust you can put into people who tell you what cryptocurrency is, why it matters, which projects are the best to invest in, et cetera. And Maxim basically set out to, use numbers and data to solve why crypto has value, and he's been quite successful in doing so. To give a quick summation of what Santiment is in its current state, is it's a comprehensive market intelligence platform for crypto. We focus on clean and reliable data feeds, low latency signals, And of course, custom market analysis in the form of insights, write-ups, both myself and especially Dino. Dino is the most prevalent writer on our platform. He puts out excellent reports on a weekly basis, at least 3 to 4 times a week, discussing what kinds of metrics are notable right now, how the markets have reacted to it, and how they still may in the future. So as he mentioned, there's a ton of alpha to the types of insights that we provide. And it really just gives context to what the markets are doing in plain English for people who may just not like to stare at charts to tell their story. There's going to be a certain percentage of our fan base who prefer to just have it all spelled out for them and have it summarized in easy to digest reports. And that's what we try to do. And of course, we leverage anywhere from on-chain to social to development activity metrics. And we use all sorts of data sources for, you know, our social data in particular, where we look at the amount of mentions of a type of metric or just a keyword. You know, how often Elon Musk is mentioned, how often Ethereum is mentioned, how often, you know, buying or bought is mentioned versus sell, sold, or selling. That's a very interesting sentiment-driven analysis that gives you an idea of where the markets are and how people are feeling about them at any given time. And then we have a ton of different specialized tools and indicators and strategies that allow us and our community to identify and contextualize and react to any sort of market event and anomaly that may be happening at a given moment.
Right. So you mentioned there your community. So what is your community typically made up of? Is this like professional crypto traders, or is it a wide scope of people in the crypto world? What's your kind of typical?
Yeah, you know, even a year and a half ago, we had an emphasis on trying to attract as many advanced traders as possible. We figured that those would be the main types of people to come to our platform and really get use out of these types of metrics that require a great deal of patience and kind of a learning curve. But over time, I would like to think that we've actually become much more appealing to the common and even novice trader out there who is looking for easy signals that they can use to give them a direction into where markets are going and how they can react to it. And our goal, especially when I came on, and I'm sure Dino would feel the same way, is to make data and numbers and complex topics like cryptocurrency more digestible for the common man. So we're definitely growing rapidly. Yes, part of that is definitely due to just these all-time high prices and more people being in crypto. But I do think it's also a testament to us really trying to ELI5, as they like to call it, explain like I'm five. We really do our due diligence to try to make things comprehensible and appeal to the masses more than any other cryptocurrency data platform does right now.
Yeah, I think the big part of that is the fact that fundamental analysis has kind of gone a little bit more mainstream in the last couple of years. And that has definitely helped us as a platform that basically provides fundamental analytics. You know, like Brian mentioned, we have currently about 150 different metrics and indicators on our platform. Many of them have been sort of built in-house, so they're not really available anywhere else. Anything from, you know, data directly from the blockchain explaining different facets of network activity to social activity data, where we track, you know, 1500 and more different cryptocurrency related channels and how those, you know, chatter points correlate with the market action and the coins price action, development activity data, where we track the, you know, GitHub activity of all of these different, you know, cryptocurrency projects and how, you know, whether they're staying true to their roadmap and continuing to push code and work on their product, or it's sort of all died down. So over the last couple of, like when I started with Sentiment back in 2018, many of these things were still kind of an unknown for the wide majority of the market. But really, over the last couple of years, and especially with this latest bull run, a lot of people have moved into fundamental analysis. I think fundamental analysis in general, sort of, we call it really behavioral analysis, because a lot of our indicators are, you know, the baseline of all of the indicators that we create is, okay, what sort of behavior of a particular set of stakeholders does this metric explain? And if it does that in a particularly effective way, we keep it on the platform. So I think a lot of people have, expanded their tool set from just basic technical analysis, which I think was the go-to during the 2017 bull cycle, to now understanding something that was previously considered to be fairly complex, things like the MVRV ratio, the NVT ratio, a lot of these sort of, unique metrics that are completely endemic to the cryptocurrency markets that weren't really popular a couple of years ago. Now they're just kind of become a part of the market vernacular. A lot of people are aware of it, and that's also helped us grow as well. And yeah, like Brian said, I think 2 years ago, our user base was largely made up of like digital asset management platforms, veteran traders, data scientists, journalists, right? People that are already sort of have some sort of an idea of how the crypto market runs and can use this sort of massive library of data and metrics that we've created. But over the last couple of years, it's really sort of grown and branched into habitual traders, people that are just new to crypto in general. And that's sort of how we've try to adjust our platform around as well, in terms of both the content that we produce, in terms of the type of UI that we have on our website. Our main website is app.santiment.net. So that's S-A-N, Santiment, which is sort of the main, our flagship product, where you can check out the metrics of over 1,500 different coins. And if you go to the website, you'll kind of notice that, at least from a UI perspective, we're really trying to make it as simple as possible. Mm-hmm. Every metric on there has very long and, sort of easy to read descriptions, tutorials, videos explaining each of the metric use cases. We're really trying to, make this data, which used to be very sort of complicated and considered to be only reserved for sort of the upper echelon of crypto traders, we're trying to make it approachable to everyone. And, hopefully that's just going to keep being the trend over the next couple of years.
And the name then, Santiment, does that come from like sentiment? Because I've just been looking on that website, the app.santiment.net, and I can see lots of, you can get the Twitter sentiment, Reddit sentiment. So you can overlay it on the graph. So yeah, I guess the name sort of came from, the name sort of derived from sort of sentiment. Is that right?
Yeah, right. From the general sort of market sentiment. Yeah. And it's a play on words. It's also sort of, so the sent, the reason why it's S-A-N-T is because there's this story of, it's supposed to sort of resemble an ant, right? So there's the idea that sometimes it's important how you look at, for example, if you want to analyze an elephant, right? I can't remember exactly how the story goes, but it's a favorite story of our founder. So for example, if you, let's say if you're very small and you have a massive elephant in front of you and you touch his leg, right? So you're only sort of, what you're really getting from it, that sort of feedback, is you get a very sort of narrow view of what you're actually interacting with. And then you touch his hoof and you touch his ear, and it's all these sort of individual touch points, but you don't really see the entire elephant, right? So what we're trying to do is, as a platform, is really we're trying to provide all of these different angles for people to analyze the market. Like I said, outside of just financial data and price related data, which is a technical analysis, which is something that you can also do on our platform to an extent, our main goal was to sort of provide additional context to the market, things that people may not be aware of. And this is what we're trying to do through on-chain analytics and social data and development activity data and so forth.
Yeah, so you're pulling data from all these different sources. You're almost like a one-stop shop for information on any given cryptocurrency. Yeah, it's very interesting. This is not seen anything like this before. is quite fascinating. And something, a question that came up for me was you mentioned there, you said fundamental analysis, and you've got 150 or so metrics. Mm-hmm. But I wonder, do we know what fundamentals are in...
That's a great point.
Yeah, in the crypto.
Honestly, great point.
You're kind of defining it yourself.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I also said behavioral analysis metrics as well, because really the concept of fundamentals in crypto are very, you know, I think it's open to wide discussion, and it's very often quite subjective. You know, what constitutes fundamental value in cryptocurrencies is, I think, a topic that can be discussed for 24 hours straight, and then you probably still don't get a clear-cut answer.
And now fascinating, because I sometimes think about the companies that have, you know, business models behind them, and I take, for example, Ripple, for example, you know, with XRP, right. And they've got like a business, and that you kind of... I know XRP and Ripple is in shares in Ripple are different things, but it, you know, they kind of correlate a little bit. So you'd think that, you know, if Ripple has success, then the XRP would probably, you know, do mirror that kind of success. But you think of like Bitcoin, and there's no real, I mean, Bitcoin's now determined that people say it's the digital gold, and that's kind of, you know, defined that. But then it's very difficult, I think, to define, you know, because there's so many, aren't there, at the minute. I mean, it's a crazy world at the minute. How many are there, Kenny? It's like 7,000 was listed on CoinMarketCap. I mean, and then that's only ones listed on CoinMarketCap.
We have 3,500-4,000 at least.
Yeah, we have 2,000 on our website at the moment listed.
So, right.
And you're totally right. Like, but it's also the fact that because there's no you can't really value cryptocurrencies the same way that you can value, stock market
companies.
And that's why, the data scientists and, you know, cryptocurrency researchers have come up with all of these new and creative ways to try and, explain the value of a coin. Like, for example, when you were talking about Bitcoin and how it's sort of, you know, it doesn't have any sort of, you know, earnings report or whatever, right? So there's nothing that you can kind of, use as a starting point to analyze its value. One of the things, one of the surrogates for the price to earnings ratio in cryptocurrencies is something that we call the NVT ratio. So it's sort of the idea behind it is the same as the price to earnings ratio, the PE ratio in the stock market. However, what the PE ratio does is it sort of takes the price per action stock, and then it divides it by the sort of earnings per share, right? But there aren't no earnings per unit of Bitcoin, and Bitcoin doesn't have any sort of year earnings report. So what you do instead is the NVT ratio takes the total market cap of Bitcoin, and then it divides it by the total amount of transactions, of Bitcoin transactions occurring on the network on a daily basis. So what that does is essentially it acts as a sort of the total amount of value that is being transacted on the Bitcoin blockchain at any given day, right? So when you take the total market value of the coin and you divide it by the total amount of value being transacted on the blockchain, you kind of get a ratio, and you can say at least, okay, based on the amount of value that is currently being transferred on the Bitcoin network, we can say that the coin is currently over or undervalued, right? So that's just one example of the types of indicators that, people have come up with in order to fill this gap in terms of figuring out exactly how the heck we value these assets.
And a similar thing. Go on, Kenny. Yeah, similar thing happens on the stock market, doesn't it, volumes, in the same thing with volumes, you can almost, you know, determine what's going on with the company depending on what the volumes are doing that day.
Right.
I was just going to ask, obviously, these guys have got to make money out of this. These are not a charity. So, I mean, what's the pricing model? I mean, I know it's a subscription model, but can you give us a bit of a breakdown of how it works and what you get for each subscription?
Sure. So there are two tiers for our. So first of all, there are several different sort of services that we provide. Like I said, our flagship product is Sandbase. app.sandtiment.net is the website. So there are two sort of tiers to Sandbase. First of all, when you create an account on Sandbase, you get 2 weeks free, so you can explore the platform and really make sure that it's worth your money. And so 2 weeks, totally free. All of the insights that we create on a daily basis, all of the metrics and different tools are available for you for the first 2 weeks. And then starting from then, from there, the sort of first tier is just $49 a month, or $44 if you take a monthly plan. And that includes a variety of our, almost all of our metrics, full historical and present day data, unlimited access to all of the market insights created by the Sentiment team, as well as full access to the Sentiment screener that we've created, which lets you sort of filter out pretty much all of the assets in our database by the specific metrics and fundamental indicators, right? You also get access to unlimited alerts. So any metric on our website, you can create an alert for so that you can be instantly notified when there's a massive sort of anomaly in a coin's network activity or social activity. So for example, one of the things that we've noticed very early on with our social data is that massive spikes in social volume for a coin, or basically massive spikes in mentions of a coin on crypto social media, especially while the price is rising in value, the price is appreciating, usually indicates impending correction or a local top, at least the short-term top. The idea being that, you know, it signals sort of that we're reaching this peak market hype, where the market has become hyper aware of the rally, but also increasingly and irrationally confident about the coin's future price performance, which is usually where whales or large holders start dumping on the market. And then also it suggests that everybody that has sort of wanted to get into the rally is probably already in. So there's going to be a decline in buy side pressure moving forward. So when you see these massive spikes in social volume, we've done some back tests on it. And so far they have proven our hypothesis true. So one of the things that you can do is you can set up alerts that the next time that the coin that you might be invested in starts getting, talked about quite a lot on the crypto social media, because it might be an interesting time to reconsider your portfolio, right? So those types of things are also available on our first tier, which is, like I said, $49 a month. And then the Sandbase Pro Plus, which is the sort of upper tier, is $225 a month. And it includes everything that I just mentioned, as well as a more API access points. So basically, you get more calls. If you want to really use our API to create your own models, if you don't want to sort of if you want to create your own trading bots, if you want to backtest some of our metrics, you want to create your own templates and trading models and trading bots, you're going to need sort of draw directly from our API. So really, our Pro Plus plan is aimed at data scientists and asset management platforms that are really sort of that know how to take advantage of all of this data that we offer through our API. And then from then on, we do offer sort of a few custom services, like custom reporting reports for large clients, but that's sort of a contact sales type of
And then $49 a month is pretty much nothing. So as I mean, I paid more than gas fees in one transaction this morning. I think it
me
was
too.
$147 or something. That was just
I paid $150 a couple of days ago on a transaction. So it is what it is,
Yeah, I know. It's you keep thinking, right, I'll go up early in the morning and I'll try and, because there's supposedly times when gas fees are a lot cheaper, but the last 2 or 3 weeks, it's just been, it doesn't matter what time of day it is, you just seem to get hit with these extraordinary gas fees. So hopefully that will get resolved in the coming weeks and months.
Layer 2 optimism and all of these things that are coming up, hopefully they rectify these issues. I mean, there's obviously a lot of demand for Ethereum in particular, right? I assume you're talking about Ethereum.
Right.
And that's, one of the main questions for the next couple of years is whether ETH 2.0 is really going to solve all of these scalability issues. But at the same time, projects that are involved in that space, projects that are trying to solve these scalability issues like Matic, which has now rebranded Polygon, and Loopring, all of these sort of layer 2 solutions, which, try to solve or at least alleviate some of these transaction fees, they've grown exponentially over the last, well, not exponentially, but they've grown massively over the past couple of months because Ethereum's fees are so freaking high that any sort of project that is trying to rectify this to at least some extent has, you know, 5x'd easily over the last couple of months. It just shows you how much people want this problem to go away, right?
Yeah, and yet you end up, I mean, I'm pretty new to this game, but I mean, already I've been, you're trying to find the cheapest way to move, currency about, or cryptocurrency about, you know, from exchange to exchange to, you know, different, as you mentioned, the Polygon earlier on, that you, because some of them are that cheap, some of them are literally cents, and it's so yeah. quick. And I mean, Ethereum as well. I mean, I think I've actually had about 3 failed transactions in the last month. You know, and there's nothing you can do. It's gone. It's just gone. So yeah. it has. So anyway, we'll not dwell on that because we're here to talk about sentiment. I'm interested to know, how does the token fit all into this, the SAN mm-hmm. token? Yeah, where does it play its part in the business model?
Right. So the SAN token is something that, I mean, we've had from the start, but over the last, I want to say 6 months, we've really started growing use cases for the SAN token in particular. So at the beginning, SAN token was mostly a discount token. That was sort of the, in 2017, 2018, a lot of tokens were simply discount tokens. So you stake SAN and then you get, discounted access to the platform, right? But our idea from the get-go was to make the SAN token sort of a cornerstone of a more decentralized approach to market intelligence. So outside of Sandbase, right, or app.sandtiemann.net, which is our main platform, over the last couple of months, we have worked on developing several conjoined applications with the idea of adding a decentralized layer to market intelligence in order to, you know, one, boost the use cases of our SAN token, but also just provide full ownership of, everybody's, allow people to sort of tokenize and monetize their own crypto market know-how. So for example, I'll give you an example. One of the things that we've developed over the last 6 months is called SANR. So it's, if you guys are interested in checking it out, it's sanr.sentiment.net, S-A-N-R. And it's the first sort of decentralized marketplace for price prediction signals. So what that means, the idea is fairly simple. The essentially, when you have an idea of where you think the market is going to be headed next, you can come to SANR and you can create your forecast for a particular coin, whether you think it's going to rise or going to fall from this point on. When you do, your prediction gets logged onto the blockchain as an NFT. Or a non-fungible token. So it becomes sort of an immutable proof of your market reputation and your sense of the market, how you, how accurate you are in reading where a particular coin is going to go next, right? And one of the things that we, one of the reasons why we think this is a very cool thing to do and a very cool platform is that it allows you to build a reputation as a market analyst without people having to be skeptical about whether some of the signals that you've created in the past have been deleted, with full transparency so that people can go back through all of your signals and see exactly what your performance was like, and all of it gets recorded directly on the blockchain. So it's kind of your blockchain trading journal. And in the future, what we want to do is we want to allow people to, once they've built that reputation, monetize it by issuing subscription NFTs for their price signals, where people can buy NFT subscriptions the next time that so that the next time that you as a user of SANR publishes a signal, they can then get exclusive access to those. The idea is, I think, fairly simple, but there's really nothing out there similar to what we're building. And I think it's very cool. Like, there are other sort of copy trading platforms out there. Let's not kid ourselves. Like, I don't know, eToro, pretty much every sort of, even Robinhood, I assume, they have sort of these copy trading mechanisms. The difference is that it's first of all, fully centralized. So you don't really own signals and you don't really own who you you provide access to as far as sales are concerned. And second of all, people can't really be 100% certain that the predictions that you've made in the past are completely and 100% accurate and true and immutable in a sense. What we're trying to do with this platform is we're trying to decentralize the entire process of, building your own reputation on the market as a market analyst, as a person that understands market moves, and then allowing you full control in order to monetize that know-how that you've built, right? Everything on this platform takes SAN token in its, so all of the sort of predictions, they require SAN tokens in order to make them. And then in the future, these NFT subscriptions will also sort of include SAN tokens as part of the platform. So it's these types of things that we are working towards in order to really provide more value to our token, and also just in general, add a decentralized layer to our end goal, which is, democratizing market intelligence.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept. You took the words out of my mouth, because I was going to say it sounds a bit like copy trading, but obviously you've explained it. It's a bit more unique, because obviously it's got the NFT element.
Yeah,
within it. Just to finish off, because I mean that's almost an hour we've been talking, believe it or not. What's the roadmap like then for the rest of 2021 for Santiment?
So we have a few big things in store. One of the major things major side projects that we've been working on recently is revamping our address labeling process. So for those unfamiliar, as a market intelligence platform, how you label addresses is extremely important, especially. So for example, one of our tools on the platform allows you to see all of the top transactions of a particular coin in a particular time frame that you set, right? You see address A has sent X amount of tokens to address B, and you can check out the historical balance of both of these addresses to figure out whether they're short-term holders, long-term holders, and how their activity may be correlates with the coin's price action. The next step is to provide more information about each of these addresses. Instead of just making it address one to address two, we want to provide more sort of information about who address one and address two are. For example, if address two is a centralized exchange, we can add labels such as, okay, this address belongs to a centralized exchange, whereas address one is just a long-term trader or a long-term holder of this coin. And it immediately provides you with further context about exactly who these people are. And that sort of, that same philosophy ripples throughout all of our metrics. So one of the things that we are working on and have been working on over the past couple of months is, and this is also sort of this also has SAN token in the center of it. We have built this platform called Wallet Hunters. It's hunters.santiment.net. It's sort of another project where we are trying to crowdsource market research tasks. So the idea is, as much as our machine algorithms can, we're trying to improve our labeling efforts as far as labeling addresses, but there's nothing that can really come close to, community research and community-driven labeling. So what you can do with Hunters is you can create proposals or answer one of the proposals that the Santiment team has created as far as the types of addresses that we need labeled. Like, for example, if you are aware of Uniswap Treasury wallets and we're not, you can provide information about which of those wallets, where they are, and provide information about those addresses, and other people can vote on your proposals. It's all decentralized. And if the proposal passes, it gets sort of integrated into the SAN-based platform as well. So one of the main things that we're going to be working on moving forward is improving our address labeling so that we can provide more context as far as what exactly is happening on a daily basis on the market. And then I think one other major topic is going to be expanding our on-chain coverage to other blockchains. So currently, we provide on-chain data for Bitcoin, Ethereum, all ERC-20 or Ethereum-based coins, Litecoin, BNB, XRP, and a few other coins. However, you know, every time that you want to provide or add more blockchains as far as providing on-chain data for it, it's a completely new heuristic. It's a completely new infrastructure that you have to build. So we've been listening to feedback from our users as far as which blockchains they want to see us integrate next. You know, they're very sort of hyped up and coming blockchains like Polkadot, Cardano. You know, there are definitely blockchains out there that we currently don't track as far as on-chain coverage is concerned, which will cover their social activity, development activity. But network activity-wise, we're still lacking in that period. In that sense, so we're going to be, you know, sort of growing our on-chain coverage in that sense as well. We're still by far, I think, the most comprehensive provider of on-chain data, but you know, you got to grow or you die.
Yeah, it just that's a good point actually. Just maybe to really finish off in competitors. I mean, is there any rivals out there doing the same stuff as you guys?
Yeah, there are a few sort of projects that provide on-chain data for, there are several differences between Sentiment and its main competitors. Number one, I think, is the scale of coverage, right? So a lot of our competitors provide on-chain data and mostly or sometimes even exclusively focus on Bitcoin and Ethereum. We, on the other hand, I think as far as the quality of our Bitcoin and Ethereum data, we're neck and neck with all of our competitors. However, where we sort of shine is we also provide full on-chain coverage of 1,000 more coins, including everything that's lived on the Ethereum blockchain, coins like Uniswap, Chainlink. A lot of these up and coming assets on the Ethereum network that are now within the top 10 and top 20 assets overall by market cap, not a lot of our competitors really have much data on, whereas we do. And then the other sort of distinguishing factor is our social data, which nobody really has on the market. It's a completely new, unique data set that we've created. We track, like I said, over 1,500 different cryptocurrency-related forums, including Telegram channels, Discord servers, Twitter accounts, and we've created a bunch of new and unique metrics using this data set that isn't really available anywhere else and that we do believe has alpha for people that want to use it. So those are some main distinguishing points between us and the competitors.
Excellent summary. Mark, you got anything to add to finish off?
I did want to finish off on something, and thank you very much, both of you, for your time, for on telling us all about Sentiment. It's fascinating, and I think it's something people should check out, pulling all those metrics. There's nothing else I can see out there, and it's very interesting. You might be defining the fundamentals of crypto, and it's quite an exciting place to be, I think. And just very interesting, a really good idea, I think, what you're doing. But I wanted to just finish on the crypto space. I don't want to spend too long on it because we are over an hour now. Maybe we can get both of you back on or something in the future, and we can do a bit more specifically in crypto. But me and Kenny have been getting a lot more into crypto recently, both the mates, what we call the main ones, or the ones you can buy quite easily on various exchanges, and more recently, the ones that are not on exchanges, where you've got to go through lots of different workarounds and ways to try and get the crypto into your wallet, which is very interesting. But I wonder what, for anyone who is thinking of doing more in crypto, or people who are in crypto, I mean, have you got any, not advice, but just words of wisdom, because there are so many coins out there. How does one, define which one they like the look of or which one to go for? And what's your general feeling on just the state, I suppose, the state of the crypto market at the moment? Is it just really crazy, or is it just, is it a wonderful place to be?
Yeah, sure. I'll take this one first, and Dino, Brian, maybe you can go after. So a few key bullet points, I would say, in terms of how to identify a proper trading strategy. It starts with patience. For anyone who has been in crypto a while, whether they came in at the beginning of the bull run or end of the bull run, they have noted that it's been a much more volatile market and a more of a roller coaster than anything they have likely ever traded in before. And this is because of the sentiment-driven nature of those markets. So the reason why holding or hodling has so often been an effective strategy is because of the fact that people can't help themselves but to buy when things are skyrocketing and sell when things are plummeting. Mm-hmm. In order to avoid making these mistakes, unless you are really tracking our data and you know, a few other key ways to gauge objectively good ways to know when tops and bottoms are happening or bull markets are starting or ending, it can be very difficult to navigate how to beat the strategy of just holding on to an asset for a long period of time. Now, identifying which assets are good to hold on to comes down to many of the things that Dino touched on here for the past few minutes, but also development activity, seeing the type of asset that is increasing in the amount of GitHub submissions going on, or at least staying at a pace that is considered high compared to its peers in that particular crypto sector. Looking at something like Ethereum, they have historically over the last 6 years grown substantially in their amount of innovation and improvements to their asset. If you look at something like Dogecoin, they are basically at something like 0 or 1 updates on their GitHub per day. Even during the bull run or crazy skyrocket in its price over the past few months, its development activity has gone up slightly, but not anything even remotely comparable to something like Ethereum or some of the top projects out there. And that's something to think about if you're really looking for a mid or long-term strategy. Look for the ones that have high development activity. Look for the ones that have growing active addresses, the amount of unique addresses interacting on a network on a daily basis. And of course, circulation too, the amount of unique tokens moving around, because that's really what perpetuates prices, is the amount of utility and usage and fundamental real life use cases that are arising for these projects month in and month out.
Okay, that's a good answer. Did you want to finish us off, Dino?
Yeah, we're just going to say that this is probably another 3 hours of...
yeah, I agree.
I mean, basically, the question is, how do you value cryptocurrencies? I've been trying to figure that out myself for the last 3 years. In all seriousness, I think Brian's idea was pretty good.
Yeah.
You start with coins that have any sort of... You start with trying to figure out which coins actually have... any sort of fundamental value. And a good starting point is looking at their development activity, looking at the overall volume of trades, but also what's going on their network. Are there actually addresses that are interacting with this coin? Are those addresses growing or declining? Because if they're declining, it usually suggests that the demand for the coin is lessening over time, right? What is the on-chain transaction volume on a daily basis? Meaning, what is the total amount of value that is being transferred on the network on a daily basis? What are its, things like NVT ratio, which we talked about, and the MVRV ratio, all of these different indicators that suggest whether a coin is currently overvalued or undervalued. We can talk about that. I think both Brian and I are more than happy to come back one day and just discuss our favorite, 5 or 6 indicators that, we use to figure out, to do due diligence on a coin before we really jump into it, right?
Absolutely. Great. Listen, guys, it's been fascinating having you on and talking to you. Thank you very much for your time. Kenny, do you have any questions, or are we good to finish?
I'm going to keep my mouth shut because I've got loads of questions.
Yeah, but
I know if I start, it'll rumble on for another hour.
Well, it's a perfect opportunity to an open offer, guy. Come back again, and we'd love to have you on again in maybe a month or so's time. Because we can go on for a long time, can't we? But we've got a fantastic insight there into you two, into your history, into sentiment, and how it started. And hopefully, that's good information for people to to go and have a look, go and check it out, and then and yeah, hopefully we can speak to you both on a semi-regular basis. But thank you very much, and yeah, enjoy the rest of your days or afternoons, whatever time zone you are in.
We would definitely like to come back, guys. Yeah, and we'd like to remind everyone that we've got a Discord too. If you go to Santiment Feed on Twitter, you can check out our Discord link and just dip your toes in and talk to us. Our staff are there, myself and Dino are there, and we've got advanced traders all over the place that can really help people get to know what fundamental data is about on our platform and whether it's worth their time. You know, we don't force people to buy large memberships in order to be a part of this. They get 2-week trials by default, and we want people to feel comfortable before becoming permanent members. That's the way we do things, and it's the way we're always going to do things.
Oh, I forgot. I don't know when this podcast is rolling out, but we do have an outstanding discount for... we're running like a spring campaign where I think it lasts 3 or 4 more days. So by May 14th, there we go. Okay. So if you use the code SANSPRINGFLING, it's I mean, we can share with you guys if you want to, once you share it on socials, you get 40% off your first billing cycle. So even, you know, that $49 that we were talking about, you can get it for 40% less by May 14th.
By May 14th, using San Fling Spring. We'll put that out.
Yeah, yeah. San Spring Fling.
Perfect. Great. Well, thank you very much, both of you.
Yep. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye, guys.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Ben and Russell. Tune in next time.